Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to let you know about something special and new that we're offering to our Patreon backers. Beginning Sunday, May 1st, we're going to be hosting monthly virtual tarot hangs for all of our wonderful Patreon supporters. These hangs will be informal in style, basically just show up with a deck of cards, maybe a delicious snack and a beverage, meet some cool new readers from around the world, and pull some cards. We might decide to all draw one card, share it, and then interpret the meanings together. There might be one person who requests that we focus on uncovering an answer to a very specific question that they're carrying, or we might just start shuffling and throwing cards and see where they take us. This new offering comes during a time when we are setting a goal of reaching $100 a month on our Patreon in the hopes of being able to offer our podcast guests a little bit of financial compensation for the time, energy, and wisdom that they so generously share with us and with all of you here on In Search of Tarot every week. It would only take us about 20 new Patreon backers joining at the $2 a month level for us to reach that goal. So it's definitely doable, and we would really appreciate your support in making this goal happen. So head over to patreon.com/insearchoftarot, become part of our community, and join us on Sunday, May 1st from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Central for our very first virtual tarot hang. Hope to see you there. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I spent the morning writing all morning, which is something I've started doing. We usually record these podcasts on Tuesdays, and I have the most free time on Tuesdays. And so I've been doing a lot of writing in the mornings, and it was a really lovely way to begin the day. What about you?
I've been observing you writing. You have been writing up a storm, but it's been like a real pleasure to kind of watch this exploration that you've been taking into like mythopoetics. If anybody's not been observing that on social media, you should. But yeah, this for me has been kind of a creative day too. I've been writing a bunch and working on a bunch.
Awesome. Well, and speaking of writing today, and I was saying before we hit record, I feel like we're going to kind of go down a little bit of a winding rabbit hole. When we were selecting the topic we wanted to talk about for today, we just said, you know, let's grapple with something. Like, let's, you know, let's find a topic and pull a thread and like see what comes from it. And I realized that we're recording this right at the tail end of Pisces season, and it just feels like so appropriate to be swimming in the deep, deep, you know, dark ocean, not really knowing what we're going to find at the end of Pisces season. But yeah, we're just going to kind of start talking and see what threads we weave together. But you, speaking of writing, you shared a really awesome blog post yesterday, kind of talking about what it means to take on this idea or this mantle of healership, and like what goes into that. So do you want to kind of talk a little bit about, well, I'm curious to know, like, where did that idea come from for you? Where did that originate to write that?
Oh, it kind of came up with, I was reading about Christ, because I'm like a devotee of Christ. And so I was thinking about that. And I was thinking about like, the things that kind of keep me up at night, which it's funny because this kind of showed up in my body as like angst. I'm like, oh no, I just feel this like terrible unrest. And what about this makes me so uncomfortable? And it came up for me when I was I was kind of like floating through my explore page, and every once in a while I see the word like somebody's handle, something shaman, the cacao shaman or something like that, or the tantric shaman or whatever it is. It got under my skin, Nick. It got under my skin so bad. And I was like, oh, I was so bugged by it. And so I wanted to kind of start with that and like what came up for me in exploring why the word shaman was such a bother. And it got me to thinking about like my own explorations and what it means to be a healer. And I want to, the asterisk here is I don't identify as a shaman. I am an energy healer and I work in like the realm of the body. And sometimes these things can intersect, right? Like some shamans do deal in that, some folk healers do deal in that, but like, I have no, like, I am not a shaman.
Yeah. And I think we want to like, you know, take a moment to just clarify, especially in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of clarification around what it is to be a shaman and kind of the roots of that word and who should, you know, who should or should not kind of be able to even claim that title. So, just a quick Google on Merriam-Webster, you know, shows that shamanism is a religion that's practiced by indigenous peoples of far northern Europe and Siberia that is characterized by belief in an unseen world of gods, demons, and ancestral spirits responsive only to shamans. So, you know, like you said, there have been a lot of people in the like magical witchcraft, you know, new age, you know, healership communities that have used this word. And we kind of are thinking about that or rethinking that now, you know, should you actually even be calling yourself a shaman, you know? So if you are someone out there listening that has a relationship with that word, you know, we would just encourage you to kind of do some research on your own and make sure that you do know what the roots of that word are and, you know, decide if that is something that you really can even claim, you know, at all.
Exactly. Thank you so much for that, because there are many, many different names. So there's like curanderismo, which is like the medicine people of Central America. There are mambos, there are hexenmeisters if you're in the north of the United States and so forth. But like these folk healers, they undergo this deep mentorship. A lot of times they're with somebody else who has been practicing. And a lot of times it's not this kind of showy thing that shows up on Instagram. A lot of people, you know, they may not even be anywhere on social media, but not only that, like it comes without clout, it comes without pay. It only comes with like the gratification of being in service to your community. And there is a lot of, you know, to be a folk healer, it entails a lot of like the gritty stuff. It's not as like cool as, I mean, it is, it's cool, but it's also like, you know, we're fascinated by that word. We're fascinated by that mantle. And so I think a lot of us enter into these spiritual spaces because we've experienced that healing. And so it's a really human thing to experience that joy, experience that healing, and then share it with everyone. But there is a difference between wanting to share that healing and then also like taking on the mantle of a shaman or a folk healer.
Yeah. And it was interesting after the day that you were kind of texting me about this topic, I actually happened to listen to an interview with Byron Ballard. And I shared it with you on New Age Witchery. What is the name of that podcast?
That's New World.
Right. New World Witchery. And she is actually called the Village Witch of Asheville, where I grew up. And she also was making this point where she was saying, you know, there's this kind of like, idea of what it is to be a witch or to be a healer. And then there's sort of the difficult, ugly truth of it. And she was saying exactly the same thing. She was like, you know, I have not gotten paid very well, you know, over the years. It's a very, you know, exhausting practice. I'm often with people near death, you know, when they're going through death or through really hard times in their life. And you had made that same point when you were making this post where you were saying, you know, people kind of like the idea of being a folk healer, you know, until times get tough.
Everyone wants to be the healer until it's time to do healer shit. And it's really scary sometimes. Nobody prepares you for that unless they do, in which case you might be preparing to be that healer. But it's so true. It's like, and so I think, you know, coming back to the idea of Christ, like people always would kind of chastise him for hanging out with like the tax men. You know, that's kind of where he would be. And his idea was, well, I'm a doctor, I'm going to hang out with the sick. Those are the people that need me most. It's not this kind of like, putting yourself up on a pedestal, which made me think of kind of like the God complexes that we see, like the televangelists come to mind, right? The gurus who, like Bikram Choudhury, if anybody's familiar with his work, he's the founder of Bikram Yoga, and now it's called 26 and 2 most of the time. But he had a great falling out in the yoga community after being kind of called out for sexual assault and so forth. But this is kind of wherein we have like these problems, right? I put myself up, or, you know, you, the royal you, puts yourself up on a pedestal for kind of the excitement and the glory of getting to work in this realm or get recognized for doing this work. Anyway, and I also want to inject here that we need to be really careful about like romanticizing indigenous cultures as outsiders. This leads to also like spiritual tourism, which is going to exotic places and exploiting the land and exploiting these indigenous practices without having any of the context, having any of the training, you know, and it just leads to so many different problems.
Yeah. And one of the things that we discussed as we were talking about this topic was the sort of slippery slope that exists with when someone is a healer, or is a priest, or, you know, is any kind of spiritual leader. And when maybe they forget that, like, they are still a human, you know, that they are not, that they become almost like a demigod, you know, in the process, in the eyes of people. And this is actually something that I really see reflected in the Hierophant card in the tarot. And I feel like there's this sense of, you know, it's the first time that like society's idea of the person is kind of coming into play, and the way that that makes them see themselves differently, or the way that people see themselves or see them, you know, differently. And, and just that we can't forget that they are still human. They're not actually gods. They are just, you know, doing work on behalf of, you know, spirit or whatever, but they are not, gods themselves. And that is where this idea of sovereignty kind of crept in. And that's a word that has been just kind of, you know, tapping me on the shoulder for a while, because sovereignty is a word that you do see circulating a lot in spiritual spaces. And it just, I don't know, for a while now, it has not set completely well with me. And I was struggling to even articulate why that was, but I think it's for this reason. I think it's the slippery slope of when someone kind of says, I have sovereignty, like in a spiritual capacity, and what that implies, and the way that that can imply a not needing of anyone else, you know, like kind of a like I only need myself and my channel. And it's interesting. This is what I wanted to talk to you about with this word is, you know, when I think back to when I first entered into magic, and so much of witchcraft and magic, you know, there are definitions of magic that even say something along the lines of, you know, magic is kind of bending nature to your will or something like that, or sort of, you know, whatever you kind of want to happen. And there definitely are people in the magical community that sort of really believe that is, you know, what can occur. And I just think that's really complicated and can be dangerous, because it does sort of turn you into this like kind of demigod. So what do you, I mean, how do you approach that, and how do you kind of check that for yourself?
I've been sitting a lot with that too, because I think that when I bring up these criticisms of like, okay, but this is not a way that is, you know, being in right relationship, this feels like exploitation on so many levels. And, you know, what they'll meet me with is, oh, but I'm just living my truth. I just want to like live my truth. And I have been really kind of bucking up against that phrase for the same reasons that I think, like, you know, sovereignty, which is kind of a buzzword. We have these buzzwords that evolve, every once in a while, but like that, and the sentiment underneath it is like wholeness, right? Like Maya Angelou says, I belong to myself, right? And so there's the sentiment underneath it, and I see where that's coming from. But it's like now suddenly being like your own agent and you're only beholden to yourself. I don't want these phrases to be like, you know, anybody exempting themselves from the responsibility that they hold. And so I think, and oftentimes, like when people are like, well, my spell work didn't work. Why didn't it work? I'm like co-creating my existence. And I'm like, well, yeah, but there are millions of other people also creating their existence.
Right.
And so, like, you know, our actions don't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And how does that kind of come into play? And sometimes, a lot of times I'll see this idea of sovereignty as a kind of, equal and opposite reaction from people that have experienced really oppressive religions. You know, and both of us kind of come from that background in different ways. And, you know, there's this desire to kind of reclaim your own sense of power when you've been, you know, put under someone else's thumb. And like, of course, I mean, that's totally natural, you know, mm-hmm. but I guess like what I've been thinking about when I think about that is maybe in a way doing that is kind of just replicating what already was wrong. You know what I mean? Like you already were in a situation where someone sort of had authority or had sovereignty over you. And then you're mm-hmm. saying, well, now I'm just going to have complete sovereignty over myself. But like, that's not really doing the opposite. That's kind of doing the same thing, you know?
Exactly.
The opposite would be a more communal, you know, relationship mm-hmm. kind of based, living. Mm-hmm. And that's something, you know, my friend and just absolutely an oracle, I believe in our world right now, Sophie Strand, of Cosmogony, talks a lot about, thinking happening in relationship, you know, and, I will say as someone that was raised, you know, as a man in our culture, that is definitely not what was in my mind as far as the way thinking occurs. You know, it was definitely that thinking is something that you kind of do on your own and that you arrive at your own, you know, thoughts based on how much, you know, how strong your own mind is. And right. that is sovereignty. I mean, that is sort of saying like, I have, you know, my own sovereign, like ability to think, but Sophie is saying, no, like all thinking happens in relationship. It happens in response to what someone else is saying. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what you and I are doing right now. We're sort of communally thinking, you know, together. And, yeah. and like I said, I mean, that's something that I love to do like as a Libra. And that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast to begin with is just whenever I have interesting ideas, it's always building off of someone else. It's never completely on my own, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I think that this like really, really brings it back to like the lover's card and being in equilibrium. I think that's what it is too. It's just to like come away from this idea of like, you know, the pendulum swing and everything kind of moving to another extreme. And that's what I think it is in my initial thought was just to bring it back to a place of like harmony and equilibrium. So yeah, thank you for that thought, Nick. I love that, being in relationship.
Yeah. So, you know, after you kind of went through this process of writing this and having all these thoughts and having, you know, relational conversations with me and some of your other friends, what was your kind of takeaway?
My takeaway is always, this is where it always leads me back to. And it is to kind of check in with myself. And because those thoughts are alive in me, it's like what Rumi says, right? If you're looking for it, it's already there. Mm-hmm. And so because this felt so like alive in my body, because it showed up so intensely, I had to check in with myself and kind of go, wait, where is this like living in my body? And am I too quick to, you know, answer when I don't actually have the answers? So that's kind of where it first led me, but it also made me so grateful in being able to kind of come to my friends, because I think that it helped me kind of arrive to this place, which was, you know, community. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that reminds me of something else Byron Ballard said in that interview I listened to, where she was pointing out, you know, people would not have called themselves these titles that did this, you know, long ago.
Oh yeah.
Like they wouldn't have even said I'm a witch, or, you know, she was saying it would have just been, you know, oh, I, you know, you hurt your leg. Oh, go see, you know, Aunt so-and-so, she'll, you know, do something to make it feel better, you know? And just, there was just this understanding that there were these certain people, you know, in these communities that could do these things. And, yeah. and when it was needed, and I, there's a real, like humbleness about that too. And I do want to kind of point to the capitalistic, I think, instinct to like commodify everything, which is something that on the episode with John Rice from Mindscapes Tarot, he was really wrestling with the idea of commodifying his art as he was making that tarot deck, which I thought was so interesting and honest of him to share that he was saying, this has never been my income source. It's always been a hobby. And I really don't know how I feel about turning a hobby into a source of income, the pressure that gets put on us to do that. So, you know, I think that's a big piece of this too, is like the need to like say what you are and sell your wares and, you know, and like make it capitalistically, you know, beneficial, and that the lineage this comes from, that would not have been any part of it, you know?
Yeah. I think Elena did, from Politics of Tarot, did a really great job. I actually, kind of accidentally tripped over this in my wanting to dilute this down into something that made sense. But they did a post on their Expanding Vocabulary series in the tarot that they were talking about facilitators and how someone kind of emerges out of the need of their needing to be like a facilitator, someone to give everyone an equal voice, someone to lubricate the frictions, as they said so beautifully. I loved that phrase. Mm-hmm. And it brought this image to mind of like, you know, the boatmen of the river Styx. We're moving from the world of the living to the world of the dead and back and forth again. And so it is to be like an expert in those liminal spaces.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about taking on a mantle from the outside in versus from the inside out, you know, mm-hmm. and when it can emerge organically versus when you kind of think, you know, oh, I want to be a healer and like, yeah. and then you chase after that, you know, just interesting. All right. Well, anything else you want to share before we hop off?
No, I think we've done, you know, a lot of swimming in the deep here, but yeah. It's kind of like that, like, you know, the last little bit, I guess, would be like these roles come kind of like, you know, you wouldn't just jump into the ocean without having like a healthy respect for what is underneath those waves. So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So if anyone has any thoughts about any of the threads we've touched on today, you can email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And Angie, I will see you next time.
See you next time, Nick.
Thank you for listening to In Search of Tarot. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_. That's birdgerhl_. And you can follow me, Nick, at In Search of Tarot. This podcast is independently recorded, edited, and produced by us, which means that we rely solely on the generous support of our Patreon backers to make this podcast happen. If you'd like to lend us your support, you can do so for as little as $2 a month over on patreon.com/insearchoftarot.